Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery. Code Wondery.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 531. All right, I'm going to get right into this podcast as quickly as possible. So, blah, blah, blah. I'm doing stand-up in Portland, June 12th to the 14th. Tickets at heliumcomedy.com/Portland. Okay, great. Watch at midnight on Comedy Central, weeknights after Colbert, Monday through Thursday. I would very much like to thank 2K's Evolve for sponsoring this episode of the Nerdist Podcast. Evolve is essentially a four-on-one game where four people hunt a monster and then the fifth person plays the monster. There is a tremendous amount of delightful trash talking when this occurs. And personally, I like playing the monster. I like being on my own. But you might like playing, you know, maybe you want to be a medic, maybe you want to be a trapper, maybe you want to be a hunter. But the game is fantastic. And people have been waiting for it for a long time. It's finally coming out October 21st on Xbox One, PS4, and PC. And 2K and Nerdist are partnering up for their first ever Evolve tournament at E3, which is coming up incredibly soon, next week. So to see the competition live, check out twitch.tv/evolvegame. The tournament's Tuesday, June 10th from 3 to 4, Wednesday, June 11th from 5 to 6, Thursday, June 12th from 4 to 5, and we're going to have the gang there at the E3 booth with 2K at E3, so drop by and say hello. Thanks to 2K and Evolve for sponsoring this episode of the Nerdist Podcast, which is Tom Cruise, who I met at San Diego Comic-Con last year in Hall H. I moderated the Edge of Tomorrow panel, and it went really well, so I just kind of blurted out at the end, hey, do you want to come on the podcast? And he looked me in the eye, and he said, yes, I will, and I believed him, and he did, and it's nice when that happens. It's nice when people follow through on their word, but this was just a really fun time. He was a great guest. Bryan Cranston and Simon Pegg had both said, oh, he's really great to hang out with, and he really was. We were all comfortable. He was engaged. He was very engaging, and we all left, I don't know, just feeling real good. So good time was had by all, and you should definitely see Edge of Tomorrow. We had a screening for it. A nurse put on a screening for it at the Chinese Theater a couple nights ago, and the movie is fantastic. It is fantastic, so you should definitely go see it. It opens today, June 6th, and here you go. And there's podcast number 531 with Tom Cruise. My little podcast is growing up.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Oh, good. The circle has been closed.
Did you shake hands last night? Relax.
The circle has been closed.
Figure out how to turn the music off last night.
That was so. Yeah. We were at the. We already started recording, by the way.
Yeah. Normally at movie theaters, I'm always like, man, turn it up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's the first time I've ever said, turn it down or turn it off.
Well, we were literally standing in front of the screen, and I guess in the projection booth.
Score.
Yeah, and the, and the projection booth was just like, it's low enough, and we couldn't hear each other. And it,
I was like, is that music still on? Like, what is happening here? I've heard this music finally, so many times.
When I
was
it
like,
finally turned up, I thought they were switching tracks. Like, it's going to the
So then it would stop, and we'd be like, yeah. Okay, so then Tom would go, so we just went to Italy. Dun 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 dun.
This could be an intense story.
On.
And then finally, someone was like, "Kill it, turn it off." And then we were fine. But I felt like such a dick last night. I did not. At the end, I go, you know, I'll just let's take a selfie. I'll get the crowd in the background. They will feel like they're part of it.
That was funny.
I was so nice of you.
And all of a sudden. And you were very kind to oblige, and I turn around, and then I look back around, and I just see this flood of people like, I've opened the gates! And then...
That's fun. Well, we were in the man's Chinese. Well, it's no longer the man's Chinese, but the Chinese theater. Yeah.
What?
That was a very cool moment.
Some other company bought it. It's no longer TCL.
The TCL. I'm glad they bought it, and they're holding up the heritage of that theater, which is
beautiful theater.
And I've seen so many great premieres, photos of premieres through the ages. Yeah. You know, so it's.
What's your favorite premiere? What's your favorite premiere of all? Do you have one out of all of them?
You know, I've had some really cool premieres. I had one in Japan, and it was beautiful at an ancient castle. You know, and it was really fun. This was fun doing three in a row. Warner Brothers wanted to do it. They said, you know, but I had to call Emily, who just had a baby. I was like, are you up for three in a row? Like, it's up to you. If you don't want to do it, cool. I think it could be fun. But the one in Japan that we've had have been really beautiful. It was very elegant. It's for Last Samurai. But I've had a lot of fun. I started doing this. I remember the first, my first international PR tour. I kept saying, look, I want to go international. I did domestic for Risky Business. And then Top Gun, I went on like this 4-month international tour.
And a Tomcat? They let you fly it? Does it go?
I actually flew in the Tomcat.
Did you really?
Three flights in the Tomcat.
That's awesome.
Three flights in the Tomcat. It was awesome. That's the only reason I did the movie. I was like, I had it a part of my contract on Top Gun. I said,
Did you really?
Yeah. They were after me for about a year to make the movie. And I was working with Ridley Scott in London. He said, you got to work with my brother. And they just hired Tony for this. So I went and met with Tony and I said, you know, that was a stipulation. I have to get filmed in the Tomcat.
Cool.
Yeah, it was very cool.
Maverick was
it was very cool. You got to do it. you got to take those opportunities.
I mean,
I think some of the other actors are like, "What?" I said, "No, you got to get in it, man. We all have to get in it."
It's a little benefit.
Some of the footage was hilarious.
Chris, we had
some
footage of Tomcat rides.
I'm not going to say the actors, but some of them we look at the footage and they're just heads bobbing, reaching for the vomit bag. Like, we could use the footage, but it was great at Rush's.
The guy playing Merlin is just puking everywhere.
It was like Cruise. Fuck him.
Was Anthony Edwards like, I'm not fucking getting in that thing. No, I just came off Revenge of the Nerds. I'm not fucking, I'm not getting ejected from a plane.
Revenge of the Nerds.
It's one of my favorite movies.
I just did my cameo on Revenge of the Nerds too.
Yeah.
You like, because we talked about this a little bit last night, but obviously there were two moments for the Comic-Con panel. Number one, the Stacey Jacks thing and the singing, which I really had no idea. And I never would have been like, hey, we were the same. I would not have been that guy. And you brought it up, and I was so freaked out by that in a good way. But then you totally made Bill Paxton do quotes from Weird Science.
Yeah, you got to do it. You got Paxton. You got that crowd. It's like, come on, Bill. Come on, man.
It's like, I don't know, man.
And I was like, come on, man. Do it. Do it. Do it.
And so all of a sudden he just goes, you think they're having fun being catatonic in the closet?
Like, weirdly, my favorite part of the 3D last night was just watching him.
Of watching Bill Paxton?
It was just like, oh my God, it's like he's right here.
Yeah, there's Bill in front of me.
Like, just
like
kind
of
just kind of shouting at
you. Chris McCrory wrote that great speech for him. I mean, it's just, no, sir, I'm from Kentucky. Battle is the great redeemer. I think people are going to quote that speech. It's so cool, you know?
So you were, it sounds like you were a fan of a lot of 80s comedies then, if you knew Revenge of the Nerds and Weird Science.
Yeah, man, I'm a fan of movies, you know? I made an 80s comedy, Risky Business, but I just love movies, you know? So I go to movies all the time. I watch about a movie a day, and I love it.
So what was so Risky Business was, because Taps was the first thing that I ever saw you in. Mm-hmm. But Risky Business was the, you know, I was exactly the right age for Risky Business, the right age to be like, because, you know, just a few, that character, Joel, was just a few years older than me. I'm like, oh my God, I want to be in that. So what?
I can't wait for my parents to leave. Your parents are like, don't see that movie.
I wonder how many injuries happen of kids trying to recreate the dance scene.
Oh, we've all fallen.
Yes, I've fallen many times.
I wonder how many injuries recreated when kids tried to put a whorehouse in their house. Yeah.
Injuries are recreated when they drive the Porsche off the dock. You know?
I hurt my wrist trying the Top Gun high five. Where
did you hurt your wrist?
How did you hurt your wrist doing that?
I'm a little fat kid. What are you going to do? It's like, oh, no.
I mean, you had Curtis Armstrong, fresh off Revenge of the Nerds.
I know. Curtis Scotti, who's great in that film, too.
When did you, you know, for some reason, I was born in Louisville, and someone said they...
That's amazing. You were born in Louisville?
I was. Yeah. Are you from there? Someone said there was a connection.
My parents are from Louisville.
I haven't been back
in
years.
And I lived there twice. I lived there twice growing up. Went back every summer. I had great memories of Louisville.
I have very...
Louisville, Cincinnati. I lived in Canada. In Ottawa. I lived in... Syracuse,
yeah,
St. Louis.
You should settle down.
Why'd you miss so much?
Settle down.
Jersey twice.
You went back to Jersey again.
Twice. Jersey. Went what? Back to nice Jersey.
Let's give this another shot.
Went back to Kentucky. Twice in Kentucky. Twice in Jersey.
So, at what point did you start to feel like, oh, this acting is something that is a thing that I could do and I should pursue?
You know, I wanted to do it my whole life. Everywhere I was, I started to have jobs as a kid. You know, I sold. You know, Christmas cards and seasonal cards and had paper routes and everything. And I'd save my money, you know, I mean, and go to movies. And I used to write skits and just kind of perform for my sisters and mother and make her laugh, you know, play different characters. And they knew I just had a passion for film. And I remember I saved a few thousand dollars and I was going to go to Europe because I always wanted to travel the world. And I wanted to bicycle through Europe is what I was going to do. And graduated high school. I'd been to so many schools. I was like, I'm done here. And I just decided at that point, you know, this is what I want to do, actually. I just moved to New York and started making movies.
Hmm. And do you
17, 18.
And it's been pretty steady since then.
It's been pretty steady.
It seems to be going pretty well.
It's been a little busy.
You're going to stick with it?
Let's not jump the gun, Chris.
Yeah, I think I'm going to stick with it.
Yeah. It seems...
I'm going to stick with it a little. Yeah, but I did risky business. I mean, when I did Taps, it was a great experience because we had weeks of rehearsal and prep. And it was great because I was working with Timothy Hutton. I don't know if you ever saw Ordinary People.
Of course.
Incredible movie, incredible performance. Sean Penn, it was his first film. George C. Scott. Harold Becker was a director. Stanley Jaffe was a producer, just produced Kramer versus Kramer and won the Oscar. And they took these young actors, and for about 5-6 weeks, we had workshop, and then we went and shot the film. And I had the opportunity firsthand to kind of go to each department and learn how movies are made. You know, we had Owen Roisman, great cinematographer. And the director and producer knew how interested I was in film, and they just really allowed me to go to each department and just... I'm kind of the person, if I don't know something, I ask a million questions. So I was just nonstop asking questions. And I didn't know, like, marks. You got to hit a mark, like, lens. I just knew movies. Yeah. You know, I knew the cinematographer's movies, you know. There was no internet at this time. I know, listeners. That's hard to believe. There's no, you know, mobile phones.
Before the 90s.
There was time before the 90s. And you didn't have film school. So my film school was just asking people a lot of questions and meeting a lot of people. And then out of that, I got another agent and came out for the first time to L.A. and stayed at... I remember the first time I came out to L.A., Penn picked me up at the airport. And he had this old, I don't know, Firebird or something like that. You know, cool car. You know, we're kids. You know, it's like, whoa, he's got so Hollywood. So cool. How about Hollywood? You know, Penn and their family kind of grew up in this. They knew all the stuff. I didn't know agents or whatever, lawyers, the whole thing. And I just love movies. And I'll never forget, we drove outside of... That night, we drove, and we drove outside of Hoffman's house, Brando's house, and Nicholson's house. And we just sat there like a couple of idiots.
Did you tell Dustin Hoffman that you drove?
I did. I did tell these guys later. You know what I mean? As the years went on, I told them. I was like, I know. I did that. Yeah. And Hoffman said, you should have knocked on the door. Believe me, we thought of it. They say that now.
Now you knock
on the door and they're like, call the police. Yeah. But we sat there.
You better get off my fucking property right now.
A long time talking about, what do you think they're doing? You know? I don't know. The lights are on. Yeah.
Is this the police? There's a car outside that won't leave my driveway.
I feel like you just finished a sandwich. Maybe it was corned beef.
But what's interesting about hearing you say that is that it's a sort of romanticized idea of like, well, this is what it means to be a movie star. This is what it means to be in the film business. And then, like you said, you didn't know marks. You didn't know anything. And then you start getting into the process and then you realize, like, this is a craft. These are human beings. They're people. Dustin Hoffman was probably just living his life like a person, not this sort of, you know.
I know. And I was lucky because I got to learn it, and I got to work with great people from the beginning. I mean, Sidney Pollack, filmmaker, you know, Paul Brickman, to have a script like that, Risky Business, with that kind of writing, that kind of editing and storytelling, and to be that young. I mean, I came out, when I came out after, when Sean brought me here, I would just take meetings with directors and writers and basically just ask a ton of questions. You know, I just was like, what is screenwriting to you? What story to you? And finding out really the craft of how things are put together. And it was great because even on Taps, the director allowed me to go in and see rushes and prepped me. He said, look, don't, you're going to, I'm just showing you this take is going to be in the movie. And here's the lens I shot it on. Here's the film. Here's, you know, so I was able to see what, in every aspect of filmmaking, what they were doing and how it all added up. Like every little contribution. I've always had great respect for the crafts, for the craftsmen of film. I mean, from, because every aspect contributes to the world we're creating. And so I've kind of learned it just from the ground up and just was, just still, you know, I'd study all of a director's films and then I'd go in and take a meeting with them. And normally it wasn't like a lunch, like anything. I was just literally like asking them about, why did they make those choices? You know, and movies, it's a fluid experience, and it's, you're constantly under pressure because of budget, because of weather, you know, everything. It never changes. It doesn't matter the budget of the movie. But having those experiences and talking to them about certain takes that were a mistake and they ended up going, that's what worked, and things that you think are going to work that don't work, and understanding how we put all these things together to try to communicate to an audience. And it's really the kind of skill to understand what it is, putting these all these elements together to communicate to the audience and know that you're creating that impact on the audience for a particular scene. And then also to have that time period where a movie has a life after. You know, when I started out, it was just, you know, you'd sell it to network television, you know, yeah. And my films are R-rated, you know, Risky Business. I was like, you know, and but what's great now is you have Laserdisc came out, VHS, and now, you know, right. They just live on. And it's, you know, it's pretty amazing.
So what is it about the, because I always, the thing that I marvel at, I mean, there's to some degree television is like this, but not really. But with a film, there are so many points where something can fault. So many points, whether it's, you know, directing, cinematography, the lighting, the music, the anything, the editing, anything. So how do you, in sort of this search for, you know, like, how do you make a movie, how do you start to figure out how to keep all of those pieces in conjunction with one another?
You know, you want to work with great people that are also on the same page and let them do their jobs. And it is such a unique art form that it does take a group. It's a group effort. It's a collaborative format. And the thing is you just constantly, you know, have to know the tone you're going for and really at times be able to step back and go, is this, like, see what's working and what's not working. Because no matter how well you've written your screenplay, you've got to be able to go, this, we didn't get it, or it doesn't work. Or sometimes then adjust it and go, let's take the story down this line or the character down this way. And just have faith. And it's something, it's a process that you have to be committed to. You got to really be dedicated to it because it is a process. And I mean, these movies, I've worked on Edge of Tomorrow for 3 years, Rain Man years, you know, Born the 4th of July was a film that was around for 10 years. And it's something that when you're working, it's 7 days a week and you're constantly combing through it and constantly, and you got to have a passion for it. For me, it's not work. For me, it's, I love it. And we're, you know, and you have to know when you're there also, because sometimes you work something so much and it's like, we're strangling the process. You got to back off and just, you know, kind of be able to step back and get a look at it. And you got to be willing to experience anything, man, because it's, you know, in making movies and just know, for me, it's, I love making them. And what's great is that you're just, you got to always remember that. You got to really, and just keep working at it. Same with, you know, characters. And I was lucky because I got to work with Hoffman, you know, Newman, And working with Newman at a very young age was really beneficial. Because I have a wide taste in films that I like. I like a wide range of movies, not just one kind of film. And I always thought, I want to be able to do this the rest of my life. So I'm constantly working on my skill and understanding what is drama, what is suspense, what is comedy, why does comedy play? And the kind of comedy that I like, character comedy, is, you know, there are things that you should know about how comedy works or how drama works and structure and storytelling. And so it's something that I'm constantly working on, and you constantly learn with every person you work with. What I focus on, and I think from my early experience on Taps, it was incredibly beneficial. And I, as time goes on, I appreciate even more and more. I appreciate it at the time, but even more and more, which is they kind of looked at us and they were trying to bring our talent out and what worked. Because we were young actors, mm-hmm. and they were working, you know, they're kind of standing back and saying, okay, who are these actors? You know, we develop these characters, but how do we get the best out of them? So what I'm always looking to do is, how do I get the best out of the people that I work with and get the best, and they get the best out of me? And I tell everyone I'm working with them, I say, look, it's nothing's perfect. It's like there are no absolutes, but this is what we're going for, and we're going to do our best. And no bad ideas. You know, if you have stuff, bring it to me.
We need more monkeys.
Yeah, I need more monkeys.
Okay,
that's
no
exactly
bad
it.
Ideas.
It's like, let's, what? Yeah, that was a bad idea.
We brought the monkeys.
No, we brought the monkeys. Okay. Well, yeah, I know, but, you know, that was really bad.
Okay, okay, more time with monkey ideas. Any other ideas but monkey ideas?
Right, yeah. Apes. Okay. Apes.
Well, apes work. Yeah. Apes and monkeys work.
Wait, aren't they the same thing?
Well, yeah.
Nah.
Primates.
I don't know much about apes.
Yeah.
Joe's the new executive. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just giving a note because I have to be heard.
Yeah, okay, go ahead. Jump in at any time.
Yeah.
If I don't say something, I'm going to get fired. Yeah.
They're going to not know I'm here, and then they're not going to send me the paycheck.
God damn it, no monkeys.
He really hates monkeys.
What's up with that guy?
Really?
His father was killed by monkeys.
Angry. But I often, you know, sometimes you can get so close to something and see it so much that you go, I don't fucking know if it's good or not anymore. I don't. The syllables don't even mean anything to me anymore. How do you know when you get to that point?
You get there, and there's moments, you know, particularly like I've spent most of my life in writers' rooms, editing, you know, sound stages all over the world, and there are moments where it's like, is this working or not? And you just have to go, you know, you just go with it. And there are those moments you want to stand back, and it's also when you screen the film for the audience, you want to remember, why are we making this movie? And every film is for, you know, audiences, they've got a wide range of what they like. And but you do get there. You're like, damn, you know. But just the important thing is not to – I remember I was laying there in Taps. I was like, man, I love this so much. I'm having so much fun. I can't believe this is happening to me. And I was laying there at night, and I was just like, I couldn't sleep. I was so tense, you know, like I want to do this the rest of my life, and I'll never, you know, like what happens, like what, you
please
know,
just let me do this forever.
Please just let me do this forever.
That's all I'll ever ask for.
A monkey suit. I'll wear a monkey suit. And I was like, there's so many things that I thought I just don't know about storytelling and making films, and I just lay there, I just started laughing. I said, this is ridiculous. I said, look, all I can do is do the best I can. And not worry about it. And just keep moving forward. And I think that's the important thing in making movies, because there's so – the fun thing is there's so many problems to solve. And there are no absolutes. You just have your taste and you have your talent and everyone around you. And you just go. Just do it and not worry. Just not worry about it.
Are you hard on yourself? Are you extra hard on yourself? Or
I'm hard on myself just in preparation, but I try not to be – hard on myself afterwards. Like when you're doing it, it's like, I'm going to, okay. Like if you're shooting something and it didn't work, or you don't feel it's going to work, or you just go, okay, I go into problem solving mode. Like how do we make this work? Is there a way to make it work? And I just, you kind of just got to stay in the moment, you know, and that's also acting, because I've produced a lot of films, and And you just got to stay in the moment. We're all looking for lightning in a bottle, and you've got to create an atmosphere that will allow that. And it's kind of looking at people that I'm working with, and you know, we're a team. It's a lot of fun when you're in the trenches making a movie, because you know, especially when you find something, you see an actor, you know, come in with something, or the cinema, you know, it's like everyone is together, focused. Everyone's kind of like, it's an incredible feeling doing it. It really is very unique, and I don't know how to describe it outside of that. It's got a tremendous amount of forward momentum and purpose, and it's, you know, and I was lucky because I've been on some beautiful sets, but when you see a beautiful set that's being built and you see someone, I remember seeing Ridley Scott when we were shooting on film, picture I did Legend, and I'd look at it in my eye and see it, and then I'd look through the camera, and then I would go to the rushes. He'd, you know, take me through rushes and tell me what he's doing with filters and lighting, and it's just, man, you look at that artistry, it's extraordinary.
But when you're the number one name on the, like when you're number one on the call sheet, you essentially set the tone. We sort of talked to Bryan Cranston about this too. It's like, because he, you know, the tone on his sets, like everyone's like family and everyone loves it, and they work together so beautifully.
Yeah.
And it feels like, not that they don't all contribute, but in a way, when you're the first name, you're kind of the, you know, the de facto leader, you know, and you are literally in almost all cases. So, you know, how do you lead people, and how do you keep everything going in a positive but constructive direction, especially when things aren't going the way that you think they should?
I just remain calm with things, and all I expect from people is just do the best you can, and that's all you can do, and I expect that from myself. And just on movies, I've gotten very good. Only through experience do you get like, that was not a good idea. You know what I mean? You have to live through it, you know?
Four,
it's like your parents tell you stuff. You're like, yeah. And then you're there, you're like, oh, shit. Can I say shit? It's like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
This was not a good idea.
Yeah.
You know, I remember I was working with Newman. We were doing Color Money. And, of course, I picked my wardrobe out in the summer. And I had this leather jacket and a T-shirt, and it's a scene where I come outside after the Werewolf in London scene, and scene between the two of us, and he's driving in a car. And it was literally a historically cold day, evening in Chicago. It was so cold, I was out there for about 30 seconds, and my face froze. My lips were numb. Now, I lived in Canada. You know what I mean? I'm used to, you know, in Canada, you kind of still go out with your shirt off as a kid, you know, go in the snow to get the snow cones.
Not that cold, eh? Pretty okay.
Yeah, it's not so bad today, eh? You know? And it hit, and that wind caught me, and I'm telling you, my face was numb, and I couldn't get my lines out. And I'm running upside next to this car, and in between takes, I was running into this, you know, they created this kind of hot box for me, so I'd go from thaw to frozen. And I'm looking at Newman, and I'm like, "Now, how are you keeping warm? How are you keeping warm?"
He reaches down and pulls up Newman's own coffee.
Newman was like, all of a sudden I look at him, he's got an electric heater, so it doesn't disturb sound. Sure. He has underwear properly done and a coat. He said, "Kid," I said, "but," he said, "you'll learn." You know what I mean? When summer, I thought, oh, so now it's like, okay, so you learn that, like, check the weather. What's it going to be like in January, not when you're doing wardrobe August?
I love that lesson from Newman. Always bring extra warm underwear.
Always bring extra warm.
These are the tips.
I
wonder what Newman's thinking about before he goes on set. Do I have my underpants on?
I know. He was totally prepared.
How do we make the salad dressing better?
Yeah.
Also, underwear.
He was awesome. Newman was awesome.
Do you freak out about meeting? I mean, did you freak out about meeting people? Are you pretty even keeled about it, or can you sort of squash the fandom down?
What do you mean?
Like, well, like with Newman, like when you meet Newman for the first time, you meet Dustin Hoffman, and you've been outside his house when you're a kid, and
I met Hoffman in a Cuban restaurant in New York, and he was doing Death of a Salesman, and I was actually there with my sister, and she's like, "Yeah, it's Hoffman over there." I was like, "Oh wow," he was wearing a hat. And we tried to get tickets. This is like in 83 or something like that. It was sold out. You just couldn't get a ticket. And I'd been out of the country. And she said, "You better, you know, go over and say hello to him." I said, "I'm not going to bother Dustin Hoffman. Like, look, he doesn't want to be seen." And eventually she said, "Look, I'm going to go over there if you don't." And I said, "All right." So I just went up to him. And I said, you know, Mr. Hoffman, I was raised in the South. You know, did you have to get rid of your yes sir, no sir?
You know, yeah, to, I still do it to, I still do it to a degree. If someone's like, oh, would you like anything else? No, sir. You know,
yeah,
like,
I know. Still, I get like, no, sir. Yes. And don't they look at you like
a little bit? I feel like they think I'm being like an ironic hipster. And I'm like, no, I'm not being sarcastic at you. I grew up in the South and I'm literally mean. No, sir.
Everything was no, sir. Yes, sir. No, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. And so, and it used to embarrass people when I was here. So and I said, you know, looked at Hoffman and I said, Mr. Hoffman, sir, sorry to bother you, but I just want to tell you, I great admire yours. And he looked over and he went, Cruise. And I was shocked. Do you know what I mean? Like, you see that face on the big screen, suddenly he's saying my name. I looked like, what did he just say? Like, what happened?
It was
like a weird thing. And same with Newman. Like, you know, and Newman would call me kid, you know, kid, good scene today, kid, you know?
Awesome.
But it's nice, you know. I mean, and there I was, a young actor with Scorsese, being able to talk about movies, and it's fun. But all that stuff you learn and all that stuff you just apply to the next.
Was there something about the way you were raised that instilled that in you, or were you just sort of naturally like, I must figure this out until I understand it as much as possible?
You know, I've just always been kind of like, if I don't know something, I don't pretend to know it. So, you know,
are you listening, internet?
Yeah. You know, so I'm like, I don't know, you know,
and not being afraid to
look like an idiot. You know what I mean? And if I'm interested in something, I will just keep going at it until I understand it for myself. Yeah. So it's something that I think, just who I am and how the way I was raised, maybe, but it's really just something that if I'm interested in something, I keep going at it until I get it for myself. Yeah. And with movies, I always felt that also I could work. One thing I knew about myself as a kid is like, I can work. I don't mind.
Yeah. It takes a lot to save $3,000 selling newspaper and Christmas cards. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I can work and I don't mind picking up a shovel and digging, you know, I'll be the first one to do it. And I actually enjoy doing it. You know, so it's like I'm not the guy that hangs out in the trailers. Like, I'm on the movie set. I want to be part of it. And I thought, well, I'm just going to keep working. And if I don't know something, I'm just going to look. I don't get it. I don't know. You know, we'll figure out how to understand it.
But so being someone who is obsessed with film and the process and the craft, I think there's no way that you could have ever imagined when you were first starting out, like what it means to be a famous person, what it means to, you know, like,
no,
just like that part just sort of feels like, I kind of get in the way a little bit. I just want to make a movie.
Just get me on the movie set. Let me deal with this over. I mean, you can't anticipate that kind of stuff. That was just different. I was like, what? You know, like Hoffman saying Cruise is kind of like, what, you know, huh? But, and then you kind of understand, oh, that's also part of the responsibility to be able to do what I do and understand how to promote movies. And you do that, then you can go make more movies. And it was always like, how do I get to make more movies? And how can I get into a position where I can kind of make the movies I want to make and just keep pushing myself and not, you know, like the other, it's like that stuff. So it's just like part of it. How do you do it?
I guess at this point, too, it's just like, well, this is just how... I mean, it's been so long at this point that it just sort of feels like, well, this is just my life and I know how to navigate it now.
Yeah, you just go and you just know. It's like also with Newman, and I tell everyone, it's like it was great because Newman gave me great advice. He said, you can't ever worry about the white noise with stuff, kid. And I felt that personally, you know what I mean? I just felt like I know what I'm doing and why I'm doing it. And I'm the one that has to choose. It's like my own thing. It's like I choose the films I'm going to make, right or wrong. You know, I'm making these decisions, right or wrong. And you got to learn from it. So everything for me is based on that. And it's also just the love of my craft, the privilege I feel about being able to do something that I've always wanted to do. And everything else is like, okay, I'll do this. I understand why I have to do it, you know, and promoting and make it fun. I remember when I was at Top Gun earlier, I was in Europe for months and I thought, I can't make movies if I'm here promoting for 4 months. So I came up with this idea of...
You just made Top Gun. It's fine.
Yeah.
Gonna be okay.
Yeah, but for me, I was like, that's not it. It's like, whatever. It's like, I want to make more movies. You know, I've got, you know, I want to make movies. And so that's when I kind of came up with the idea of doing a premiere in a country. Because also at the Grumman's, what's cool is I saw the photos of the, you know, what these premieres are like. I said, let's do premieres in these countries and bring Hollywood to them. And let's see if we can do, I said, I think I can do a country a day or a country every couple of days. So as opposed to taking 3 to 4 months, we can do it in a couple of weeks.
I mean, it's physically possible.
It's physically possible.
The calendar works.
And I said, look, you know, and at this time they were still building theaters around Europe. But I said, look, we can do this. And that also gave me an opportunity to travel because I was always working on films. I remember I was actually in Paris and I was working on, I think, they were editing Color Money and we were getting ready, prepping Rain Man. We worked on Rain Man a long time. And so I was like, I'm taking these calls and trying to work. And, that's my job, making the movies. And so it took a few years to get everyone to kind of buy into that country a day. But now
you just did it.
It's your fault. I know. That happens all the time now.
Yeah, but as opposed to 4 months.
Yeah, sure.
You know what I mean? If you want to make movies. Sure. You know, those guys in the 60s and stuff, they were, you know, they went came out of Hollywood where guys, they would make six movies a year. And then the 60s came and Nicholson and Beatty and Hoffman, they'd make one movie every few years. You know what I mean? And my taste was something that I want to be able to push as hard as I can in different movies, you know. That's why it's like Top Gun to Born on the 4th of July. To have that opportunity to play that character with Oliver Stone was, and see what, you know, I remember I did Rain Man and Born on the 4th of July back to back, and I was prepping both the films at the same time, and I shot them at the same time. And I mean, one right after the other. And that was like, okay, can I, you know, you want to test yourself and know and see and have experiences. To have those kind of experiences and those kind of characters and those, that kind of cinema was a real privilege.
Can you leave it at the set, or does some of the residue of it? I'm always interested to hear how different actors approach the idea of like, oh yeah, at 5 o'clock or when, you know, not 5 o'clock, but figurative 5 o'clock when it's when
5 a.m.
Yeah,
at 5 a.m.
Yeah, when we finish at 5 p.m. I showed up on set at noon. Nice.
Let's call it figurative.
Yeah,
five.
Could you imagine like figurative five? Could you imagine showing up?
No. You know, like some people just go, "Oh, it's a job," and I just leave. And other people are like, "I have to like decompress." You know, like a decompression chamber. Are you able to sort of leave it at the set, or do you sort of bring the residue of the character?
Well, it's just different things. You know, it just depends on what I'm working on. I mean, I like to work on one film as well I'm shooting, and then have other films that I'm working on with at the same time. So, like at night, I'll catch up on the other movies, or I'll, you know, just to get my mind off of the film. But there's stuff that when you're making a movie, you want to, you know, you're thinking of the prep for the next day and how do we get the most out of it? So it's kind of a combination, you know, it's a combination of things.
Are there any that you ever go back and watch where you're like, oh my God, I remember that. Or are you good at watching
yourself? I remember every take and every scene and what was happening that day.
Really?
I have that kind of, I have that kind of, I know takes, I know stuff like that. But I, you know, you work on them so much. It's not like I don't go back to look at them, but I'm on kind of on the next, you know?
What type of stuff do you watch mainly films or do you watch any television shows?
Mainly film.
What are you liking lately?
You know, I watch a wide range. I look at all the films that come out. I look at older films, mm-hmm. You know, I watch a lot of different movies.
Is there anything that you see that you go, or is there any kind of a direction that you feel like, oh, you know, I've done all this stuff, but I just haven't done this one thing yet. There's this one thing, and I just,
man, there's so many different kind of movies that I want to make. So many films left that I think, you know, I had a lot of fun playing Stacey Jacks. That was a fun character. You know, there's all kinds of. You know, you're just looking, I'm looking for a new character, and what's that, you know, kind of character comedy. I mean, the fun thing that we did with Edge of Tomorrow was, if you'd read the original script, this film, I think what people are really appreciating also is the humor that we brought in. You know, that kind of character comedy and this, and that kind of character drama in a film of this scale with all the other elements that we have involved. Like, the exosuits and all that kind of stuff, which is the bells and whistles. But really, the story is just a lot of fun. And so I like, a lot of times I'll get a script or I'll just hear an idea and I'll, we'll work on it and I'll put the characters in there. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I'll build the structure a particular way. You know, I'd been looking for a film for 7 years about wanting to do about the Japanese culture. And then Ed Zwick came to me with Last Samurai. And the story, and we just worked it over and worked it over and kind of built out that character and those characters in that world. And that's what you're looking for, something that's like you get excited about.
Yeah.
Something inspiring.
The Stacey Jacks thing really was – I mean, like I didn't go do it on Broadway because I was working in Los Angeles. I was originally off Broadway, like way off Broadway. And we did it here in Los Angeles, like in a rock club. And it was really intimate and small, and it was kind of dirty and sort of like – we're sort of making fun of Los Angeles at the same time in the 80s and the Sunset Strip. And then they were like – they said, okay, we're going to go do a run in Vegas. And we went – I don't know if you know about the – we did a run in Vegas like at the Tropicana or something. Yeah. And it was literally – like three rows of people parked on Rascals at the back and we're making all these 80s references and it had crushed in Los Angeles and we go and do it for these white hairs in Las Vegas and it just, it's dying like night after night.
Dude.
And it just did not.
Having to do it every night? For how long?
We just did it for a week and I just like, I you know.
For a week you're like, that was the longest year of your life.
Yeah.
You
know, like there's a thing you sort of develop in comedy and stand up where you kind of gauge that you get really good at reading an audience and you know, like at the beginning of the set, you kind of calibrate like, well, if they're getting this, they're either going to like or hate what's coming up. So we would start the show and just be like, oh, fuck, we haven't even gotten to the, you know, and just have to like.
What are they laughing at?
And of course, everyone's in fucking Vegas mode where they're like, I can do whatever I want. And people are like shouting back at us. And I'm all of a sudden like interacting with the crowd. Like,
oh, jeez.
And it was so.
They were shouting.
Yeah, they were shouting. It was just stuff like, take your dick out, you know, stuff like that. And you're like, please.
This is Vegas. Take your dick out. Show us your dick.
Like, no one will know except us.
And the pit boss. He knows everything.
Yeah. Oh, my so God. Is that the director's mother? Oh, my God.
Oh, no.
No, no.
So, like, you know, like the elderly people were complaining to the management about, like, this show is really dirty. I'm like, this is really the worst thing that's happening in Las Vegas right
in
now.
Vegas, they're saying this show's dirty.
Yeah, exactly. Some guy just tried to fuck a pile of coke across the street. I just made a fingering joke in a musical.
He succeeded.
Yeah. I mean, it just,
the tale is still told to this
day. It was so frustrating. It was so frustrating.
We thought this was Schubert.
Where's Frankie Valli?
But then it eventually went to off Broadway, and I couldn't go. But I heard you were in the movie. Like, how did they manage that? And
fun character.
It is a fun character.
You just like when you get a chance to do that. Have a chance to play something like that. It was fun.
I mean, it was like multi-million-dollar karaoke.
Oh, it was so much fun.
Did you? And I'm sure you got asked this all the time, so I apologize. But I am curious. Were you a fan of kind of glam metal at all in the 80s, or was that not your thing?
No, I mean I like all kinds of music. So I was there. And it was just so much fun to play. You know, you get a character like that, which you know that Stacey Jacks is. You get to sing those songs, and yeah, it was fun. It was fun. Let's just go be outrageous. I was looking forward to it.
I really did. I saved the clothes. I saved.
Oh, yeah, of course. You got to save the clothes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and you got to pull them out every now and then. Every once in a while, you pull it out and go, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Work it.
Did you save me?
Yeah, but I remember the first, because they leaked pictures of you as Stacey Jacks. Someone did, and you were shirtless, and you had the thing, and I was like, he looks a lot better than that.
Filled it out a bit more. He's a lot
of, because I remember saying to them, like, do I have to be shirtless? And I didn't know if I
should
shave
my... Do we have to be shirtless at Comic-Con? Yeah. Is that the thing?
Shirts required at Comic-Con.
But I saw your picture. I was like, oh, yeah, that's what that guy's supposed to look like. That's what that guy's supposed to look like. I just look like a skinny, nerdy kid with a shitty wig on, you know? Like, I looked like I was cosplaying. I don't know. It was weird.
But the dancing and singing, that's hard, man. I mean, my respect. I love music, but those, you know, you look at Beyoncé, Michael Jackson, Springsteen going on. You know, he gives his shows for 4 hours, which are amazing. It's just incredible.
And he won't do a minute less.
And we thank him for it. Yeah. Thank you, boss.
People get really good at... I think people somehow sort of figure out, like, where to store their energy reserve and then how to tap into that.
You have to do it.
Yeah, because you can't... I think when you're young, you go, oh, I can do whatever all the time. And then you start to get older and you're like, I think I need to rest for a few minutes.
No, even little kids, you see them, they go, and they're just unconscious 5 minutes later.
Yeah.
But also, you got to pace yourself. You got to find, even throughout the day, you know, and know what you have to deal with. And, you know, Alex, it's not my problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, NMP, man. Like, NMP, I'm not the guy.
What's the most difficult kind of thing for you in film? Like, well, not difficult, bad question. Like, what's the most challenging? You just said music and dance.
Sounds like time off.
I'm terrible with time off. I can't
terrible
stand
with time off, man. I know.
Because your brain just goes in fucking million
like,
miles.
Let's
an
go.
Hour.
Let's do it.
Make a thing.
Yeah.
If you can make a thing, you should make a thing.
You can make a thing.
Anyone can make
it. I know.
It. And it's nice.
I think the hardest thing, I mean, there's challenges. I mean, making a movie takes a tremendous amount of endurance. And you got to be just as fresh, or at least look or act just as fresh at the end of the day as you were at the beginning. And I think that's the thing. It's they're all challenging. You know, you wish you were like, oh, that was easy. You know, but it's something that if you love doing it, it's not work. And you just know you want to, you know, I want to put that extra effort in to everything I do. Because I'm thinking an audience is going to see this and I want to entertain them. And I want to, you know, whatever audience is going to go see that, they're going to know that, you know, everyone gave it everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the thing is just keeping people focused on the task at hand and you just move forward. And that's... I don't know what else to do.
How do you define success?
Well, there's different ways. It's, you know, with everything, even films that I've made, you always learn something. And I think that's the important thing walking away for me. I always felt like, what did I walk away with? And making sure that the journey of making the film is one that we did everything we could creatively and with the crew and everyone involved to make it, to do the best we could with it. Whatever we're trying to achieve. And I think those are the things where, you know, it's art. It is art. And you sit back and you kind of look at it. And there's things where you go, is this going to endure time? You know, what I look at is like, what's the film going to, I'm thinking, what's the film going to play like 5 years from now for an audience, 10 years? And that's how you have to make a movie. Not, you know, it's not just.
Well, Top Gun holds up.
Thank you, man. Thank you. Well, I got one.
I mean, A Few Good Men turned out okay, too.
That's two.
I mean, are there ever any ones where people are like, oh, my God, I love this movie, and you're just like, oh, I feel like this could have just been a little, I could have just, you know, or can you really put it to bed when you're done?
Man, you got to put it to bed. Otherwise, everything, you know, there's a point, you know, you can tweak something to the end, to the nth degree. It's like, this is it. And, you know, that's why we have schedules and that's why we have release dates. You know, it's always like at the last thing and they're pulling it out of our hands. And so, when I talk to filmmakers and people are all like, you know, we talk about different movies, but you kind of look at it and go, don't. It's next. Like, you keep that, you learn from it, and you move on to the next thing. There's always things and everything. You're kind of like, oh, I could have tweaked that or I could have done that. But sometimes those imperfections kind of, that's the time period. That's who we were then, and that's the decisions we made at that time. And, you know, it's for me, movies are, it's like, it's part of my life. You know, I spend a lot of time. I don't just, you know, what do you work? What's your hours like?
What are mine?
Yeah, like...
I tip 12
to 2 or something.
Oh, my God.
3 to 5.
No, I'm unfortunately kind of an insane workaholic. I generally work 7 days a week, and I juggle like 5 things, and I work 12, 13, 14 hours a day.
And you know it. And so as you're going through it, it's like... And that's fun. For me, that's fun also.
It is fun, but sometimes I really worry that, like, what am I running from? You know, like, I really can't sit for more than a couple of minutes alone with my own thoughts where I'm like... I got to start a thing. Let's make a YouTube video about water bottles. You know, like, you know, just that idea of like, what is it that I can't, that I'm so not content just sitting and going, I don't have to be anywhere. You know, like, I'm just bad at it.
Yeah, I take a couple of moments like that, but it's also fun creating things. It's fun thinking about stories and thinking about fun things to do. I mean, you know, I'm lucky. I get to travel around, travel the world, meet a lot of people, always getting different kinds of ideas. You know, and just that's where it's like at the opening of the film, Trafalgar Square, I was like, let's to have that opportunity to land a helicopter there. That's a cool thing to be able to do. And that's where I like creating things. I'm, you know, whatever it is. I mean, I like motorcycles and doing that kind of stuff. And
you know, did you guys actually land a helicopter there?
Yeah, we did.
That's awesome.
Yeah, we landed a helicopter in Trafalgar Square.
That's fucking awesome.
That was very cool.
Yeah,
it
sounds like
it was very cool. I remember, you know, always walking through there, and I remember looking at that. I go, man, I think we get a helicopter. you know, that's how I look at a city. I'm like, you know, or you meet someone, I'm kind of
helicopter fitting.
Getting, you know, I meet people, and sometimes
Tom Cruise sees the world.
I hear stories, I get character ideas, and I go, like, I'd like to play that character, you know, and I'll put that guy in a movie, you know, or.
Awesome.
Play that, or I think it's funny. But I was walking through Trafalgar Square for years and just kind of going, yeah, I think we could land a helicopter. Probably were sitting in a production meeting and I was just like, you know how we should open this movie? A helicopter of Trafalgar Square.
Okay.
You know, it's so a great introduction of my character because he's asleep at the beginning of the film, above it all, you know?
That's funny.
So it was a good character setup and something that's cinematic.
I just sort of feel like you have a response. I mean, like not you specifically, but you, like the human you have a responsibility to, because there are windows of things, you know. Like you're only you get this amount of time on this, but and if you have these opportunities, you fucking should take them. Because
exactly. You only have. This is it.
Yeah, this is it.
This is it. It's like I've got so many years, and the kind of films I want to make, and you just gotta. That's how I feel about it, and that's a part of my life. Going to make a movie, I'm not. You know what it's like. That's what I care about.
I don't know if I know exactly what it's like.
Well, it's like, no, what it is I want to make great films and I want to entertain an audience and I demand excellence from myself. But it's also a thing where I'm not the kind of person that's, you can't be too hard on yourself. You can't regret things. You know, you got to just learn and be in the moment. And also with other people, it's, I enjoy the process of working with other people. And so it's something that, you want to give it everything. It's not just a job. It's an adventure.
It's an adventure. How much have you seen? You've seen a lot of iterations of the film business in the last few decades.
And amazing. So, I've been doing this 34 years.
Wow. That must melt your brain a little bit.
Like, I know. It's wild,
man. Wait, 34? I know.
I think 34 years. That's like 1945 into World War II to
1979. The reverse math freaks the shit out of me.
I'm thinking, okay, the Napoleonic era, 5 years.
Mary Queen of Scots.
Mary Queen of Scots. It's, you know.
But it's,
wow.
Dark ages.
I just got the, I was performing, so I missed it, but I just had my fucking 25-year high school class reunion, and saw it come in the mail, and I was like, that says, no, wait, what? Oh, fuck. And then it, like, had to sink in, because I think you always,
what have I done?
Yeah. Wait, this is half over.
What's happening?
What the fuck? Because in your brain, you sort of always, I think you just kind of perpetually feel like 25 in your brain, you know? And until you stop and you go, wait, I'm not 25. Wait. I had this weird dream. I was 42. I'm 40. Oh my God. No, that's real. You know? And then you just sort of feel it sink in, you know? But it's, do you appreciate that part of it? Do you feel like I'm wise? When I was 30, I didn't know shit, but now I'm wise. Do you appreciate that part?
Yeah. Or do you still feel like you don't know shit?
I still feel like I don't know shit.
God, how do I not know this?
Yeah.
How did I not know this?
Yeah.
I appreciate it. I appreciate the time and I appreciate the experiences. And also seeing the transition from film. I mean, I was there, you know, just as a fan lover in the 60s and 70s and then able to make the films in the 80s and actually work with those guys that have made, really formed cinema and modern storytelling into the 90s and the transition, you know, where you look at kind of the digital age and so it's been really interesting. And the thing is like what doesn't change is a story is a story and the quality of the story and the quality of the characters. And it's been but it has been, and I do appreciate it.
What do you think is the? What are some of the challenges now that films face that they didn't face? You know, when Risky Business came out, for instance.
Boy, it's just different. You know, films would play for 6 months. You know, you'd have a film that play for a year in the theaters.
I remembered, I think, Big, like when Big came out, it was
great
like, that's
film.
Still in the fucking yeah. theater?
I know.
I think Top Gun was the same, too. Yep. It was just like, is that still in the theater? That's been in the theater for months.
And Rain Man and different films. And you go, like, even in the 90s where we had films of Jerry Maguire or even Samurai where you'd play it for months and months. And now it's like you got a weekend and maybe two. And so that is something that you have to deal with. But what's nice is how films endure. You know, we can go back and look at movies and people that will follow it over and over again. So it has changed. It's just different. And it changes in every era.
Do you ever feel like, because Tropic Thunder is one of my favorite comedies. And I had the pleasure of seeing that in
that
Los Angeles.
That is a funny movie.
Yeah. Well,
yeah, Ben crushed it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, yeah, but
Stiller just
Les
crushed
Grossman
it.
Les Grossman was a fucking great character. And
thank
I
you.
Didn't know going into it. I'm like, what? Is that fucking Tom Cruise? Like, I didn't. And so
I will fuck you up.
I mean, what it seemed to me was that it seemed like it was fun for you to just go disappear into a character and not have to be like above the line. Tom Cruise starring, and it's just like, oh, I just get to be this sort of like weird cog in this really great movie. Do you like that?
I love it. I love doing. Look, for me, it's both. It's always like. You can't ever totally disappear, but I've done that with movies, and it's fun to go and play that character, you know, and throw out like a Stacey Jacks. I'm always looking for stuff like that, like something where I just want to make movies. For me, I just want to make movies, and if I find something, a character that I go, oh, I think I can do something with this. You know, I want fat hands. I remember telling Ben, I want fat hands, and I'm going
to
dance.
Not all it's cracked up to, Tom.
You know what I'm
saying? It's not great.
I said, I want fat hands, and we're going to dance. And Ben kind of looked at me. He was funny. He was like, yeah, okay. He kind of was like, you know, he's been a friend a long time. He's like, all right. And then he called me about 4 weeks later. He said, look, why don't you just do it as you? I said, no, man. And he was great. We came up and figured out the makeup, and then I kind of did the dance that I wanted to do for it. And he found that piece of music and cut it together, and we had a great
How did you first meet? Because Ben, that must have been insane for him to meet you, because he used to do you.
I know, me and Newman.
The
Color of Money,
then on
the Ben Stiller Show.
Then at the MTV Movie Awards, the Mission Impossible 2 stunt double.
That's right.
Yeah.
But did you see the original Ben Stiller Show?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, of course. The one-man Tom Cruise on Broadway show, and he's got like the sparkly... he's got the sparkly underwear, and it's at the pool cue, and the... I mean,
hilarious.
It must have freaked him out initially when you were like, no, I think this is actually funny.
It's funny as hell. Yeah. I loved it. And that's why when I was doing Mission 2, I was like, look, we want to do
it.
I know. And I called Ben. I said, would you come and help me? Actually, you know, it'd be fun. And it was cool because he was on his honeymoon and he came back from his honeymoon to do this. It was so cool of him to do it. And what was great is that in that thing that spoof that we did, that was the first time he directed me. I was like, look, what do you think's funny? You know, we wrote the scenes. I said, give me some notes, man. What do you know this world. Let's play. And he gave me great direction during that thing. Oh, it was fun.
That was one of my favorite special features on any DVD.
Through the arms.
Yes.
I think I'm. are you good with, like, when you're working with a director? Are you really good at going like, hey man, your thing? You just tell me what you need me to do. I totally trust you. Or they must look to you to collaborate.
No, we collaborate, but it's also I'm willing to try stuff. You know, because you never know. So many times I've been in the editing room and thought, I'm so glad I tried that. You know what I mean? I like to be directed. I'll come with my own instincts on a character and work with it. And if I have an idea and I feel really strongly about it, I'll make sure that I perform it for them in a way where they get it, you know? But that kind of communication with a director and a writer and the whole crew, it's important that you have that and a trust with each other. Fortunately, I work with people that I really want to work with, that I consider friends, and I'm willing to, let's try it. Let's see how it goes. And because he's looking at it. I like to just work on a scene and just not think about it, just be in the moment and not watch myself act, you know. And
yeah.
Don't, like, I'm not a guy that goes and looks at the monitor after takes, you know. It's, you know, now we have these monitors, everyone's kind of standing around looking at different. I'll look at the monitor in terms of, you know, and I know the lens that they're choosing and the composition. I know the angle. Like, I could just look at the camera and just see. I know what the shot's going to be. And I'll look at it for certain shots just for, at the beginning, to look at the composition.
Make sure it looked really cool when you landed the helicopter and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, make sure that looks really cool. But I was such an idiot, because when I came out of the helicopter for the first time, because we only had a little limited amount of time. And it was so much fun. I was in the helicopter when it landed the first time, and I came out and Doug, the helicopter blades are going, and we did the take, and I'm waiting for Doug to get the notes, and he's like, "You're laughing. Stop smiling in the take." I was like, "Holy shit!" You know what I mean? I was like, "Like, you gotta look cooler, man." I was like, "Yeah, you're right." I was just like, I was so, you know, so I'm like, this is happening.
You don't get it. I'm landing a fucking
character, man. Stop laughing. I was like, "Oh shit, you're right. Sorry, sorry.
This is on the bucket
it's
list.
It's because the thing's going. You know, go, go, go."
Don't yell at me for having joy.
I know. Oh, have the joy inside. Play the character. Well, we have three more takes.
You must get so comfortable on movie set. You're like, "Oh fuck, we're making a movie." Yeah, I thought I was just landing. Yeah,
you want to get to that place where you're just having fun with those scenes.
Yeah.
And when I'm working with actors, it's like, man, just bring it. I want everyone to just feel relaxed and comfortable and be willing to try stuff you want to try.
Well, I think it's this. Do you do a lot of long form interviews? Or have you ever done a podcast before?
No.
I do the
30 second.
The 30 second. Yeah. What was it like to work on this thing?
It was terrific. It was great. It's going to be a lot of fun. Go see the movie. Go see the movie.
All right, bring in the next one.
All right,
bring in the next
Tom Cruise.
Oh my God, we should just release that snippet as the podcast. Yeah. And put the real one up later in the day.
Yeah.
Just,
oh, yeah, that's it. Could you imagine?
What was it like?
That was it. Tom just dropped in.
If you could go back in time, what would you do?
Okay, well, I wouldn't. That's the thing.
I don't really know.
The junkets, though, it's high. You know, it's so. Part of the beauty of a podcast is
I hate junkets. I've interviewed people at junkets, and neither of us want to be there.
No, because...
No, look, I know what you guys go through. I've done them, and I'm trying to do my best.
Yeah.
I'm
yeah.
trying to give
Listen,
it to you, man. I'm
it.
Trying to,
we
like, trying to help you out. You know what I mean? Like, we're friends. Let's help each other out. I
but
know... You know.
On your side of it, though, it's like a really weird speed dating experience where it's like, bring this next guy. Blah, 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 blah. Here's my answers. Did I do okay? And the next guy. How about now? You know, please like me. But
I'm always thinking, like, what could I do to, you know, make it interesting for them? And a lot of these people I've just known for years and years, you know.
Oh, yeah. You must run into the same people all the time. Yeah.
But I really like, I like the idea that, because I think, you know, someone in your position... You know, a lot of people might just see as just like, oh, well, I see him on this flat screen. He's not a real person. How can
he
be a real person?
Is if you go
I see this guy on my iPhone.
Creepy.
Yeah.
I see watches movies. I can't believe you watch movies on iPhones.
What's your setup at home? Do you have like a theater?
Yeah.
How big is the screen?
It's big.
It's the Chinese. Again, that was his place.
That's where we were last night.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Oh, wow.
That was just
Everybody
one of the screens.
Gotta go to bed.
That was just one of the screens. Do you play video games on your big giant screen?
No.
I would play the shit. No. I would misuse a movie theater. Like, I'm smaller than Mario.
Format-wise, do you like get 35mm in or
all of it? My screening room plays everything.
That's the awesome. Best.
From old movies to 35, 70.
Do you even have a beta
digital.
Player? Like a Betamax player like sitting around somewhere?
No, I'd rather not go beta. I'd rather if I had that. Let's go with the original film,
yeah,
you know.
Sure.
And
yes, we'll come over if that's what you're saying.
And hitting.
Yeah. We'll watch movies.
Check it out. I got all the sound systems.
I'd be glad to.
Do you have access to like Scorsese's collection? If you like had a movie you're like, and you knew he had it?
But his actual collection, like the one that no one's ever seen. Like
well,
the
he has
super
like a couple in the country where he just has these like refrigerated places with like movies that he's collected.
Which is cool.
Yeah. Could you get those?
Could you make a call?
Could you get me
Can
one?
You call him? Can you call him?
Could we call him now?
Glad you guys waited until right near the end before you're
can
like,
we take it?
Can we? Can we have the thing?
I just wanted to know what the theater setup was. That's all.
Yeah.
Good theater.
It's
sounds
good.
Good.
Theater.
Sounds good.
What sort of something? What's you know? As we're kind of winding this down, like what? I have two more kind of points that I want to try to understand. Is there anything about you as a human being that you wish people understood, or something about like, oh, you see me, but I'm not really this, like this, just something about you that you feel like people don't understand, that you want to go like, I'm a human being and this is me.
I'm actually not a human being.
Wait, what?
You owe me $5, man.
I knew it.
That's
he's
it,
a
man. That is like, you, I am not. Face. The truth is,
come with me
not
if you want to live.
Human being, come with me.
All right,
to live.
Where are we going? Sure, I'll be Sarah Connor. Whatever. Just what, with those fingers.
Yeah, twist your arm, huh?
No, you know what? It's just you. I don't know. You just live life. Go hard, enjoying it, feel lucky to be able to do what I do. And, you know, I'm someone who focuses it on what's important in life. And as I said, ignore the white noise and just, you know, really stay true to myself. And, yeah, and just enjoy it and do the best I can.
It sounds to me what I'm sort of getting at. I mean, look, for me, the podcast has always sort of felt like a way to trick people who have achieved things into, like, I feel like I'm just kind of, like, when you were saying, like, I sit and ask questions, I'm like, oh, I like this. Like, I'm always trying to just figure out, like, how and why people do what they do, and how to, you know, there's no, like, long-term success is not an accident. Like, it's work, and it's hard, but it seems like, or I assume, but it seems like what I'm getting from you is that there's this idea of like, be curious and get curious and don't be afraid to look dumb and ask questions and learn, and knowledge is really the ultimate.
That's it. Knowledge and working to be competent at something. And that's, I think, one of the things that's helped me in life is just working towards being competent. And, you know, the way I feel is I like people, and you treat people with respect, and you live your life in a way that, that just has dignity. And I feel lucky. I mean, the reason I do what I do is I love it, and I feel lucky to be able to do it. And I've had and having incredible experiences, and that's always been who I am. And, you know, people know me. It's like, I am who I am, and it's easy. You know, sometimes it's kind of weird. People, you know, I think of that moment of, you know, when Hoffman says Cruz. Do you know what I mean? I kind of look at myself. I'm a worker. I'm someone who, I love what I do. I want to entertain people, and really just trying to do the best I can at it. And that's basically the simplicity of it. It's not really more complex than that. You know what I mean? It's really kind of, I don't know what else to say.
Well, I when we did the panel at Comic-Con last year, and just because we had the duet, I was like, oh, I think I can do that. I don't normally bother people about coming on the podcast. And just at the very end, I just was like, I couldn't stop myself. And I go, look, I have a podcast. We're very nice. Would you please come on? Before I could even censor myself. And you looked me in the eye and you said, I would love to. And I fucking believed you. And afterwards I said, I think he's going to do it. And you're here. So it sort of reinforces.
So it turns out.
Like, you know, but because a lot of times people go, will you do this? And you go, yeah, of course. And then maybe you don't because not you don't want to because of time.
It's Hollywood, man.
Yeah. But it's
I know I'm a rarity. When I say I'm going to do something, I actually do it.
It was like, you know what I mean? Like Simon Pegg was on, you know, and he was like,
he's hilarious.
I became friends with Tom Cruise. And we're like, what's he like? And he's like, he's fucking great. Like he was like, he told Simon Pegg. We totally fangirled.
It was so cool having him in Mission when we did that. I love Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah.
And we were like, JJ and I were like, man, let's get Peg. See if is he available? Will he come and play with us? That's and do so it? Right. You know, and it was great because that day, all that whole speech, we'd written it that morning. Like JJ and I, you know, we wrote the scene in the morning and he came on and crushed it. He was jet lagged, but he's a great guy too.
Well, I know you have to go. I think you're doing Kimmel tonight, right?
Doing Kimmel.
Yeah, Jimmy Kimmel Show. So Edge of Tomorrow opens June 6th. It's a fucking great movie. I mean, like, the response in the theater that people were... Because I don't think most people really knew exactly what to expect or exactly how much humor is actually in the movie as well as the action and the CG. And it's a fucking great movie.
Yeah, they don't know
movie.
What they're going to experience with this film.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun.
You know, in movies, we used to hold back the trailers to the last minute. You know what I mean? And try to save stuff for the audience. And it's harder today because, but I still, with this movie, they're going to have that experience where they're going to, it's a different experience. So.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being here,
Tom
Cruise.
Thanks for having me. It's cool, man.
Enjoy your burrito, everyone.
Very cool, guys. Thank you.
We'll be glad to come over anytime.
Yeah, we'll come over. When I get back in town, you guys come over.
We would love to.
We'll play a few films that I have.
Oh.
A few films.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
Once upon a beat. Remember those stories and fables that would capture your imagination and you couldn't wait to see how they would unfold? And now, when you read them as an adult, you think some of these old tales could use a fresh spin. We have a perfect podcast to bring you the stories you remember, remix, and reimagine for the kids in your life today. Join me,
DJ Fuse,
and my trusty turntable, Baby Scratch, as we spin up new tales in the New Kids and Family Podcast, Once Upon a Beat.
Yeah.
Wondry and Tinkercast are bringing you a jam-packed, music-filled weekly party where hip-hop and fables meet. It's Once Upon a Beat. Follow Once Upon a Beat on the Wondry app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to Once Upon a Beat early and ad-free right now by joining Wondry Plus in the Wondry app or Wondry Kids Plus in Apple Podcasts.
Once Upon a Beat.